it is Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast. As you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Hope you guys are all right. Today we've got a very cool episode for you. We have an interview with a fantastic singer-songwriter called Laurie Wright. I dropped in a little bit from this interview in the last episode, I think, or I think it was the last one, where we sort of some news broke. So I dropped a little bit of that in here, but here, we're going to hear the rest of it today. So really, really good chat with Laurie, top guy. We've talked about his history with Oasis and like him getting into music and the reunion and loads of good, interesting stuff. So I hope you guys really enjoy it. Nothing's really happened in the world of Oasis news since we last recorded. Even Noel went on TalkSport the other day and I thought, oh, here we go. There's going to be something. But no, there's nothing really interesting. Nothing's really been announced. It's all been quite quiet. So we're still waiting to see. We're waiting to see. You know, we know that the film is coming out in September. We are hoping that we'll get some sort of confirmation of what's happening next year. But yeah, until we hear anything else, we're just going to keep on ticking on. So we're going to hear from Laurie. One of the reasons I really wanted to speak to him was because... what I thought was the next song in the A to Z was I Hope I Think I Know. So we discussed that. Although I just got a message on Instagram a few days ago from Mark Osborne, Aussie Peeps, saying he just realised the Oasis A to Z doesn't include I Believe in All. So yes, we missed out I Believe in All. I think most Oasis songs are on Spotify. So normally my go-to like Oasis A to Z list is the Spotify one. But then there are a few that aren't on Spotify. So I've got the other list, like the proper list that does have them all. And I'll always just keep an eye on it and just check I haven't missed one. And guess what? I completely missed I Believe in All. So we've done, we went from I'm the Walrus to I Can See a Liar to now I Hope I Think I Know. I Believe in All should have been in there. But anyway, we're going to pick up on I Believe in All shortly. For the time being for today, we're going to be discussing I Hope I Think I Know, which is a brilliant song and a lot better than I Believe in All. Anyway, well, look, that'll do it for now. Let's cross over to my interview with Laurie. All right. Well, welcome back. No, you haven't been on before. Welcome to the Oasis podcast. Laurie Wright, how you doing, man?
Yeah, good. Thanks, James. How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm very happy to speak to you on this Friday afternoon. But yeah, you've been busy. I've been keeping an eye on your stuff. You've been in France and then you've got loads of stuff going on.
Yeah, we've been in France, Spain, Belgium, Germany, Holland, basically everywhere but England at the minute. But yeah, it's been going really well. Been doing some European dates and just touring the third album. And then as soon as we got back, we had rehearsal the next day to drill in the fourth album, which is coming out later this year at Kentish Town Forum, actually. But yeah, I'll just plug that in the first 30 seconds, but accidentally on purpose. But yeah, we're making a new record in a couple of weeks. So I've been drilling the boys on that, getting it ready. And they're smashing it, like, straight off the bat.
Nice one, mate. Well, look, one of the things I was going to say, actually, I love the fact that, like, a lot of, like, modern bands, like, even, like, you know, whether it's unsigned or indie label or whatever, it's like it'll be three years between an album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I love the fact that you just keep going. You do like pretty much one a year, right? And which is what it should be. Which is what it should be. Like, that's what it always was in the 60s and stuff.
That's the benchmark for me. Being such a fan of 60s music and obviously 90s music and all in between. That's the benchmark. If this is your profession and you want to call yourself a songwriter and you can't come up with, you know, 12 songs a year, that's one a month. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing with the rest of your time? Like, you're supposed to be writing songs, recording them and putting them out. Like, fuck your TikTok and, you know, spending ages on trousers and trying to, do you know what I mean? Like, oh, what are we looking like today? Yeah, all right, yeah, it's quite important, but have you got the songs? No, is the short answer to that for most people. But, you know, there are great bands out there, obviously. I think, obviously, there's a lack of money and people aren't really aware that... But I don't think people are that aware of, like, how much can be done DIY and on a tight budget, because the record companies would want you to think otherwise. And I think people are still in this kind of thing of doing, like, EPs and singles and trying to appease a music industry that's broken. Just get on with it. Like, the industry will come to you if they definitely won't come to you if you're not putting out enough music. You know what I mean? Like, write the music, put it out there.
I think, like, I think it was Stone, you know, John Power's kid in Stone. And they signed to a major, and then they did a big post about it. Like, they wouldn't even put their album out, and they're saying, "Oh no, you got to do TikTok dances to your songs, and you know, and you've got to have a song with a 30-second clip that you can put on TikTok and do a dance to." And he's like, "Come on, man! Like, that's not what it's about. It's about albums, right?"
Yeah. Like, singles to promote an album, an EP if you've got leftover material from those recording sessions that is too good. Do you know what I mean? Like, B-sides, essentially. I don't understand what's going on. Like, why is dancing a necessity for, like, bands? Like, what are you talking about? Like, the only way you get around it is by being ironic with it and taking the piss with it. But even then, it's like, what are we doing?
I know.
Like, what are we doing? You can just not do that. Like, the Molotovs, probably the most successful up and coming British act, don't do any of that. They just write, record, put it out there, do the gigs, wear the clothes, fucking smash it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there is, it feels like there is, like, but for a long time now, it's felt like there's this underground of bands, whether it's like the K's and people like that. There's a lot of bands that are like, they're really good and have a following and pack out venues, but then there's this sort of, it's going back to almost like it was when indie was truly indie, you know what I mean? Before it became like, when Britpop, but then suddenly indie became mainstream. Whereas that's almost what it feels like. And you guys that are like able to make a living and stuff that are, you know, that are still true indie, don't get the major, you know, label support, or don't get the like, you know, TV and things like that. But yeah, still, like, people want that music. I mean, and the bloody Oasis reunion showed that people want that music.
Yeah, man. And I think it's actually a bit of a blessing in disguise. The sort of, it's a double-edged sword. I think it's a blessing in disguise in some ways, meaning that I can make a record a year because there's no record company saying no. It's a bit like, by being independent, you've completely got, you've got all the control, the creative control, and the decision making is in your hands entirely as to what you're going to do and when you're going to do it. And what has happened with the music industry sort of falling to pieces in the last like 15 years is you've had to get savvy with it or give up. So it and that is good if you can be bothered like to be DIY and realize that that means you've got not just got to go and record the record, you've then got to physically get the get the contacts for the companies to make it, set aside the budget to do that. Yeah, essentially you can't be a very talented drug addict anymore. Like no one else is picking up the pieces. Like you've got to do it. Which if you can be bothered is a really good place to be.
Yeah.
As opposed to sort of there being all these business bods with briefcases going, oh no, don't worry, we'll take care of that. And then all of a sudden they've got all the money. Not that there's much money floating about, but you know what I mean? It's like it's I think it's it is healthier to if you like, to be an artist, being DIY and harnessing that and getting on with it. And it is truly indie again.
And like and how's it been for you? I mean, sort of thinking back to, one of the things we're going to cover today is I Hope I Think I Know. And how I first just saw you for the first time was this was, talk about viral clips, right? You had this sort of viral clip of you busking and you're blasting out I Hope I Think I Know on the street corner. And it was great. People were like, look at this kid, this is awesome. Like, number one, it's not Wonderwall. It's like someone's actually doing like a Be Here Now album track, but also just the way you're doing it. Like you're sort of, all these little like guitar little flourishes and things that aren't on the record. But this is like, okay, well, this is like, I was like, okay, if the Jam had covered I Hope I Think I Know live, this is sort of how they would have done it. You know what I mean? And I was just like,
Amazing
that's
shit.
awesome. But where was that in your sort of journey as like, from becoming a songwriter and then that happening and then to the rest of your the rest of the growth.
Yeah, well, I'd always been the first thing I ever did was as a musician was busking to promote a gig that I had coming up when I was like 14. So I've always just gone on street corners, and initially with just with an acoustic guitar, and then later on got amplification and stuff like that. But I'd always done that, and I'd got completely obsessed with the entire Oasis back catalogue, really. I mean, in particular the early years. And what I was fascinated with Be Here Now, or sorry, with I Hope I Think I Know, is to me that is one of the strongest songs on the record, and yet they never played it live, to my knowledge. I
That's right.
don't think it ever got played live. They favoured Stay Young instead, the B side to what was it?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And yeah, I just thought that and I was trying to get my head around it because it's got the same guitar solo as do a lot of the tunes on that album, and it's in exactly the same vocal range as Stay Young, so Liam would have been able to sing it, but I just couldn't get my head around it. I wonder if Noel was embarrassed about it lyrically in hindsight or something, or maybe he thought it was, I don't know, but I just couldn't get my head around it. They never played it, and so I used to play all the songs off that record, most of them anyway, when I was busking, and it was just by chance. I don't know if you know this actually, but the guy that took the video was just walking past by chance. Was Gareth Vigors, off the he was on the Nebworth documentary. I think he's Welsh, and he's quite big on Twitter. You probably know him,
Yeah, I
like
know him.
big in the Oasis world. And so he took that video and then went, we had a brief chat and he was like, oh, I'm going to put this online. know, so I put it in Parker Monkeys, and I think that's where it first went off. I can't remember, but anyway, Oasis Mania got hold of it, and that's when it really, that's when for the first time ever I'd had a fan base. And it was pretty bizarre because I was in my old band called The Lodgers at the time. We were on the rocks and splitting up just before I went into rehab, you know, to clean up all that business. But the band was on the rocks and we were splitting up. And I remember they weren't that happy about it, about this viral Oasis cover that I wasn't in control of. But they weren't that happy about it because people were turning up all of a sudden, like fans were turning up demanding that we play I Hope I Think I Know. And they were like, the rest of the band weren't even necessarily Oasis fans and didn't want to be, you know, in that sort of sphere, which obviously I was very happy to be in. Mm. But yeah. So yeah, that was where was I going with that? That's just how it happened.
Yeah, yeah. And then is that then part of, so you had The Lodgers and then that happens and then sort of the gradual like movement into you becoming a solo artist and putting these albums out?
Yeah, then I went to rehab, went solo and sober. And I started, and then around that time as well, Hello cover started going busking, viral from busking. That was a similar thing, but although that had been a lot earlier, that had been 2 years previous, but it only started to go viral as a result of the other one. And then people started, what was it then? Then sort of COVID happened and I started just live streaming to stay sane, really, because I was recently sober and I was like, this could all turn south really quickly if I don't keep myself occupied. So I started live streaming. That went so well from just doing a night of covers. So it was like, you know, everything from Ocean Colour Scene through Oasis, lots of Oasis, obviously, because that's what people suddenly knew me for. And, you know, all the covers that I love playing, all the Beatles, all the Small Faces, all that kind of stuff. And then there was a following quite quickly. Like, there was the Oasis people who came in, and then the fact that everyone was at home watching people live streaming really helped me. So it seemed like all the Oasis community came on board. Nice. And yeah, lots of views on that. And then I threw in an original song just for a laugh, but this is one of my songs. And that got so much attention that night on the live stream that I had like 7 or 8 messages from different people saying, wow, you wrote that. Tomorrow night, can you do all originals? And I was like, well, yeah, I had about 75 songs sitting there, but I just didn't think that. I just treated it like busking. I thought, well, you know, I'll play some Oasis and that'll keep me occupied. But I played one of my original songs. People really wanted that. So I went, right, okay, tomorrow night I'll do all originals. Played all 70 of my original songs in a live stream. It was like three, four hours. And then that like blew people's minds of the small amount of fans that I had gained. Because they were like, what? You've written all these songs? What the hell? And then they created a fan club, which was really nice. And then that day, it was all quite quickly. There was like a real small but loyal fan base going on that kind of built and built throughout lockdown to the point where when I got out, where I'm from in Gloucestershire, I headlined when we got out of lockdown, I headlined the Gloucester Guild Hall, which is the main venue, like 400 cap, and we sold it out. And that was once we'd got a band together and everything, I skipped that bit. But yeah, anyway, then we were off to a flying start. Started putting, it was pretty tricky after that because I moved back up to London and couldn't keep a band together at first because there wasn't really any direction. Right. It was busking, full band, and then taking any single gig opportunity possible because I always had it in my head, the Oasis story. If it doesn't matter because one day Alan McGee might be there.
You never know. He's gonna walk
Yeah,
in.
yeah. And lost, kept losing band members because we couldn't afford to pay them and all this, and because we couldn't afford, we weren't making any money. We were just going, yes, we'll do the gig. Doesn't matter what it is. But then in 2022, managed to get more serious about it and put an album out in 2023. Do you know what I mean? Then it started getting serious then. And ever since, it's got bigger and better and better. And we started doing a Europe as well as of 2024. And yeah, that's kind of where it came from and where it went.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
No, it's awesome, man. And one, I think it's tricky as well, like having a band these days, because it's like there's quite a few people, like, well, I suppose Sam Fender being the biggest one, but like there's that Andrew Cushing who, you know, Noel did some work with and stuff. And I sort of think, like, well, why are you not bands? You know, because that's back in what it should be, what it always was bands, right? But I suppose it's just the economics of it these days. It's like it's just you can't do it. Like you've it's got to be more like solo artist stuff, which I think is a real shame. I'd love it if it was.
Yeah, I think it might be going back the other way, but it's definitely economical. I mean, it wasn't from a personal standpoint. I'd literally come out of being in a band for always been in bands, and that's all I wanted to do. Then went solo and sober, and then the plan was to just do that, and then started going sort of viral. So I was like, well, it's got to at least have my name in it when I do put a band together. But I was solo throughout most of COVID because you just had to be in your room. And then by that point, I'd established what it was. And so putting a band around it, we tried like putting, do you know what I mean, Laurie Wright and the lockdown or whatever. And it was just nothing was working. So I was like, the name is what it is. And it's me and my like harmonica player, best mate, business partner, who run the band, the business account sort of thing, and then employ everyone else as session musicians, because it is an economic thing. It's kind of all you can. If you find these days, most bands are doing it like that. Most bands, like Skinner Brothers, is Zach on his own with his wife managing him, and they employ people. And also, it's creative direction as well. Sorry, because it used to be really hard to keep everyone together, on the same page, like musically, logistically, clothes. It's a nightmare. Like, but if you just go, right, I've written these songs and we're wearing this and we're going here, like, you know, there's no confusion as to what this is. It's just, is what it is. Sorry.
If you're just like basically a session player, then you can't really go, well, actually, I think that you should go to a middle eight, you know, whatever there. It's like, no, come
Yeah,
on. Like
I came here with finished songs. Like, we're playing them. Like,
No
I'd be
creative
out of beer
differences.
if you don't want to be.
Yeah, got you. Oh, by the way, breaking news has just literally pinged up. I'm like, why am I getting a notification from Disney? The Great Wait is over, an epic new documentary film from BAFTA and Oscar nominated producer, writer, and director Stephen Knight, directed by Dylan Sutton and Will Lovelace, will tell the story of the Oasis reunion the world was waiting for,
Wow.
featuring unprecedented on-stage and backstage footage from the Gallagher Brothers' sell-out global stadium tour, coming to IMAX and cinemas worldwide on September 11th and streaming globally later this year on Disney Plus.
Wow, amazing.
There you go. We were waiting for that. We've been waiting and waiting. It's like, is this happening or not? You know what I mean? It is happening. Awesome.
God. The editing process must have been a nightmare. Just everything would have been a fucking viral moment. Do you know what I mean?
I know. Well, I actually chatted to Dylan Southern. He was actually at like a Comic Con. I was at a Comic Con with my kids, and he was there. He sort of co-produced this sort of comic book, and yeah. And I was like, Dylan Southern, like the film director, like you're doing the Oasis thing. He's like, yeah. And so I was chatting to him, and I was like, can I interview you? He's like, no, I'm not allowed to talk about it. Like, so I did get like a load of info, but you know, I'm just like, you know, you don't want to. Obviously, you had to sort of keep it shtum. But yeah, I
No.
mean, by the sounds of it, like he was like, they set up, you know, like nature documentaries when they like set up cameras, like in, you know, in the wild. So to capture the animals, because they're, you know, if they see there's cameramen, they'll run away. That's
Yeah.
basically what they had to do in the rehearsal room.
Yeah.
Because they were saying that like Liam would just refuse to go perform if there was a camera there. So they had to like hide cameras, like just so they
Oh,
would get Liam. But
wow,
yeah.
that's so interesting.
Yeah, but all
I
the rehearsal
can't wait
stuff's
for
been
that.
done. It's going to
I
be
can't wait
awesome.
for that. I wonder, like, I couldn't work out other than trying to keep it together, like, why they did no press. I know they didn't need to, but I
Yeah.
thought they might want to. Do you know what I
Yeah.
mean? Like, oh, a big press conference, here we are, we're back. Like, but there was none of that.
No, nothing. It was, but you know what? It probably did more because people were more excited just because they weren't doing any press.
Maybe,
Than, you know what I mean, than if they had been.
Like the only place you're going to see them together is on that stage, so you better buy a fucking ticket.
You better
Like,
go. Yeah, exactly. Did you go, by the way? Did you
yeah,
go
twice.
twice? Which
Went for
ones?
it was the best night. The first night I went with my brother, to Wembley on the oh, I've forgotten the date now. Might have been the 27th of July, but it was amazing because I was playing in the Marquis, Covent Garden. Doing the warm up anyway, we got tickets last minute through someone who knew Kula Shaker's keys player, who used to be the keys player in Oasis. So he had guest list, blah, blah, blah. Ended up on Liam's guest list down the fucking front.
Awesome.
Crazy. With my brother. And we'd grown up like brothers listening to Oasis. Like it, I just couldn't fucking. Honestly, I could, me and him cried. It
Yeah.
was the best gig I've ever been to, the best
Wow.
experience like ever. Especially considering we were in the front somehow. We got in the front, and which you just I just never thought that that. Well, I did. To be honest, I did think I'd get. I did think something will come up. Like I just think that'll be all right.
Something will
The way they went
happen.
on stage.
Yeah.
Nah, we'll figure it out later. And we fucking did.
Yeah.
Best night ever. And then I took th then a couple of weeks later, or a week later, on my birthday, they were obviously doing it. And I thought, well, I know that I can get these tickets. They're not like that. I was getting them near enough face value, 200 quid. So I was like, well. Give myself the best fucking birthday present ever and just go again. Like, why not? But that time it wasn't down the front. I was up in the stands, which was great. It was good to have
Difference.
the And I bumped into like both times bumped into like something that was really nice. Lots of people who just knew who I was, but you know, bumped into some friends as well. And then say the same up in the stands, bumping into. Friends and yeah, it was special, man.
Yeah, no, that was awesome.
How about you?
Yeah, I saw 3 times. So I was both nights at Cardiff. first and second. And then
that's when I made the decision that I was definitely getting tickets, because I watched all of it on YouTube the night after in Cardiff. The first night I went, nah, fuck this, I'm getting a ticket.
You've got to go, haven't you? I mean, you can't be... And people are like, well, the Carsons, it's like, come on, man. Like, when you look back in 20 years, you're not going to go, yeah, I can't believe I spent £200. It will be, I can't believe I saw Oasis. You know, you never...
Yeah.
It's always worth it. It's always worth it. You know, if you beg, steal or borrow, just get there, you know?
Exactly. Like, you can't be shy of just spending money. You're here for 80 years if you're really lucky. For something like that, I always think that with like dinner as well. Like, if someone is vouching for this place and it's like, and they're going on about it, like, this could be the best meal you've ever had, or it's a bit pricey, I'm like, just go for it. Like, you're always going to remember the time you had that, whatever it was, the best steak of your life. Oasis being the best steak and potatoes, the best fucking beef and potatoes you're ever going to have in your life.
Was there a particular song that when you saw them that stood out?
Slide Away. Yeah. That's when I cried. It was like me and my brother, the two brothers doing fucking, I don't know, I don't care. Take me there. And then the what for, and then that was it. I was like, fucking hell.
God.
And also Live Forever, because it had been my brother's best mate, who obviously growing up was a best mate of mine, really, passed away a few years ago, and that was the funeral song. It was, you know, we were all massive Oasis fans, and Live Forever and Slide Away.
No, nice. Yeah. So you're like early 30s. So
yeah. Cheers.
Just about clinging on to that early 30s. So did you get to see them first time round, or are you a bit too...
I did once, Cardiff 2008. And it was at the end, it was one of the first gigs I'd ever went to. Because I was still a kid then, like 16. And I'd been to the Arctic Monkeys around that time, and they were on fire. They were really coming up.
Mm.
And Kasabian were on the up. I'd seen them for a fiver in Newport in Wales. And, it was just amazing seeing them. And then I'd kind of assumed Oasis was going to be like that and gone. And you could tell they were on the way down. Like, Liam's voice was not there. It was great. I still, do you know what I mean? I had a great night, but being 16 and comparing it to the other three gigs I've been to in the last few months, it was like, well, that was the weak link, clearly. Yeah. They were just ready to split up. The only thing keeping them together at that moment would have been it was their job, and it's all they'd ever known, and a good payday. But they both didn't want to fucking be there, regardless of what Liam says. He was miserable. Like, he was fucking miserable at the end of Oasis. iTunes Festival at the Roundhouse, like that Slide Away, you're just like, it's over. That's it. This is over. You've got to stop. And, you know, both their wives would have been telling them that at the time. Or maybe Liam was single at that point. I can't even remember the amount of...
No, I know what you mean. It was like, and people say to me, like younger ones who weren't obviously like alive or didn't remember, it's like, oh, were you gutted when they broke up? It was like, no, I wasn't gutted when they broke up. It was like, okay, you know, all right. Well, the time was probably right. And I'd stopped going to see him. I saw them like six times from like 96 to 2000. 2001. Wow. But I stopped. Like, I was like, no, I'm not bothered. Like, so I had mates that went in 2002, 2005. Oh, do you want to come? I was like, I've seen it, I've seen it, and they sort of, it was, and people look back now and say, oh, how could you're supposed to be an Oasis fan. It was like, well, it's just the honest truth. I was like mid-20s. I was more into like the Super Furry Animals or like, all kinds of other different music in the 2000s. And so it's like, no, I've seen them, so yeah. Whereas then, but they needed that break. And then even then, when Liam comes back, oh, I mean, I saw BDI actually, to be fair, and I said, obviously said Noel, but then when Liam came back, it's like, okay, we've had that break, and now Liam's back and he's doing his thing. So it's sort of, it needed to go away, I think.
I think it needed to go away. I think it all happened perfectly in hindsight. I think the amount of time they were away for was right. I remember all the calls for reunions after like 5 years. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, no, it does it. They smashed it for 20 years. They need to go off and do their various things. And when those things aren't working out anymore, that's when they need to reconvene. They need a good time away from this to breathe fire back into it when it does happen. It was always when. I always knew they would do it. I had no doubt in my mind, and that's very easy to say with hindsight, and people would say, oh yeah, I bet you're fucking just saying that. But nah, really, I was always the one in the group who'd go, it's going to happen. Like, I know that Noel is not going to go to the grave like Weller and not do this. Like, Noel's different. He did love the glory and the scale of the whole shebang that he wasn't ever going to achieve solo. And he understands that his songs are, for the most part, better received when Liam's singing them. Just for the most part, obviously, "Don't Look Back in Anger" is great. "Wonderwall's" great song by Noel when he does it. And they're all great song by Noel. Don't get me wrong, but it was the sonic force of the two brothers that was gonna. It was never going to fully go away, but it needed to go away for a while. And I also think that might be one of the many reasons why they didn't do it this year, because Oasis was so readily available towards just always. Like, if they were always playing, you could always go and see Oasis. So towards the end, when it petered off, and like you say, you weren't even bothering to go and see them. I went to see them once. And they were obviously still doing stadiums, but I think they, when they've come back, they've wanted to have a bit of scarcity to make sure that, or it might even be their team doing it to make sure that it is the momentous occasion, sort of like Nebworth Part Two, which is, funnily enough, what they're gonna do. But Liam coming back solo and playing those Oasis songs and selling out Nebworth. I was at Nebworth. Were you at Nebworth?
I was at Nebworth, yeah.
Yeah, man. That was the real step in the direction of reunion. The most kind of the biggest step that there had been, I think. Because Noel was doing, like, Noel was joking, going, oh, I'll be doing some garden fete up the road. Meanwhile, Liam's doing Nebworth. And there's no way that Noel would have ignored that. He would have tuned in some way and gone, right, we're gonna do this at some point, and it'll be on my terms, but we're gonna fucking do it.
Well, funnily enough, I was chatting to the Definitely Maybe bar in Manchester.
Yeah. Oh, is that the same one as the ones in Bolton?
It's the same gang, yeah. So they opened Bolton, now they've got Manchester as well. And they're actually doing one in New York as well. They're still coming to New York. I
Really?
know, it's crazy. But
Oh,
I was chatting to, funnily enough, the owner is called Paul Gallagher. No relation, but the owner's
right,
Paul Gallagher. And I was chatting to him about it. And he was like, look, the thing is, like, Noel, there was a gig when they were coming in to, I think it was like they were playing Halifax or somewhere. And they were coming into the bar in Bolton and saying, look, giving out free tickets, like, because they were struggling to, Noel Gallagher's Highflying Birds were struggling to sell out bloody Halifax. And it was
wow.
like, and so it's like, this isn't right. You know what I mean? I think Noel came back with, you could say the Who Built the Moon album and the EPs. It was like, okay, that's him doing this sort of weird, quirky thing. Okay, fine. But then he comes back with Council Skies, a proper big album with orchestra and guitars and proper, rock and roll. And then he does a big tour, and it's like, ah, okay. It's not really, it's pretty small venues, or like, he's doing these smaller festivals, like you said, Garden Fates and stuff. And yeah, you must look at Liam's like playing the packing out the Co-op Arena, doing definitely maybe 30. And then he's going like, and I'm playing like, She Taught Me How to Fly to like, 600 people. And it's like, this doesn't seem right. So fuck this. Let's get the band back together. So
Absolutely.
I know, but what do you reckon? I mean, so well, this is breaking news, and then the other thing as well is that, so did you see that they were pictured coming out of Abbey Road? So
I just saw Liam and John Squire, but is that I thought that was something to do with the Manny Memorial gig, maybe, but
no, I don't know. I think it's basically because people were saying like, oh no, because the Paul McCartney listening party was on the same day.
oh, right. Well, it could be that.
But then people saying, oh no, because it was different times and things like that. So to me, and also looking at Liam's Twitter, he's basically, it's all, he's saying, like today he said, I am the psychedelic kingpin. And if people have asked him, is it a new Liam Gallagher John Squire album? He's saying, I can't say for security reasons and stuff like this. So to me, I think it is. Because if you think, if Oasis have definitely said, okay, we're definitely not doing anything this year. We'll come back next summer, like we'll come back summer 27, which it feels like, that's the way that the vibes are going. Well, then we've got a gap, right? And Liam doesn't like sitting around doing nothing. So it's like, right, fuck this. Let's get another John Squire album done, maybe tour it in the winter, and then we'll be ready for Oasis in the summer. So yeah, if you think that the first one he did, he knocked out, they pretty much did that. They knocked it out like, knocked it out, single, album, tour, done. So they can do it in like a 6 month window, you know what I mean? That's fine.
Yeah, it's possible. That it's definitely possible.
Yeah.
Do you know, I was like when I think it was before, before Oasis got back together. And I've never spoken to anyone who really about this, but that, just remember, Noel was saying, I've got an acoustic record, and then I've got the written, and I'm going to do that, and then I've got a stadium rock record after that, and then he sacked off the. And my ears really pricked up, as any Oasis fan would have done, I think, because they would have said, "Well, you don't make stadium rock." Do you know what I mean? Unless it's in the ballpark of Oasis. So he sacks off the acoustic record. Oasis get back together. Meanwhile, I've always got it in my head that he's got a stadium rock album written that he's doing nothing with until maybe the time's right, until they feel it out, maybe, and maybe he was going to see how the tour goes and sees if he really gets along with Liam, and then obviously with the success of that, could they make another record? I wouldn't put it past them. I know it's like they've said they're not going to and all that, but they said they weren't going to reform. They said they weren't going to. Do you know what I mean? People change their mind all the time. I believe that Oasis may make another record. I don't know when, and I don't know how. And I think Noel's so savvy that I think it wouldn't be shit. I think he wouldn't bother unless it was going to rival their earlier records. What do you think about that? Have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, and we talked about it on the pod, like, oh well, what's he saying? Like there is this stadium record, and then he said, and when he tried to do the acoustic record, and he said to Matt Morgan, that was it, you'd only ever get updates from Noel if he spoke to on Matt Morgan podcast. And he would just be like, no, I tried and I just binned it off. It's like, what's the point? What's the point of doing this, record, like acoustic record? By the time you start fiddling with it and adding things to it, then it's becoming a full record, So they binned it off. But yeah, I mean, look, there's been rumors like Noel was outside Lone Star Studios and things. So, and he said on Talksport, but now we only get like snippets on Talksport. It used to be Matt Morgan, now it's Talksport. You'd get like, he's talking about Man City for 20 minutes, and then it's like, oh, any Oasis news? And you get these little tiny little snippets. But yeah, I mean, he did say like, well, back to work, or like, oh, I'm just doing some bits in the studio. So it's like, well, what's he doing? Is he like, is it like Oasis old stuff he's messing around with, or is it like, You know, or is it actually, because really he could just go into Lone Star, just record a bunch of the music himself, and then just get Liam in one afternoon to knock out all the vocals.
Exactly. And
you
then
know what
it's
I mean? They don't need to carve out 6 months of like like the Stone Roses at bloody Rockfield.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they're there for years, you know, artistically, you know, doing this thing. It's like, no, they just, Noel will write a record everything and then Liam can just come in and sing it and we're good to
yeah.
go.
And Oasis were always so famously fast working, you
Yeah.
know,
Yeah.
but like all done within a couple of weeks, usually for a record. And, oh yeah, what was I going to say? Fucking escapes me now.
You can't even blame the drink and drugs, mate.
No, mate. I'm drunk on the riveting conversation.
Drunk on the excitement of Oasis. But I mean, what do you think? Did you hear the... Because going back to Liam Gallagher, John Squire, like, because I sort of clocked it. I mean, another thing Liam said on Twitter that sort of convinced me was he said something like, it might not... You know, people are like, what are you recording? And he said, it might not be what people want, but it's what they'll need or something. And it's like, okay, that to me tells me it's John Squire because it was probably the least well. I know some people love it, but it was probably like the least well received thing that either of them done, probably since BDI. And so it's like, okay, so people aren't necessarily desperate for it. I mean, I like the record. Like, it's not one I pull and grab and stick on, but I think, like, you know, there's some really good stuff on there that I really like I'm a Wheel and Mars to Liverpool and just
Mars
like.
to Liverpool's a tune.
Yeah, but what did you think of it? And you up for another LGJS album?
Yeah, you know, like, yeah. Like, I love them. Yeah, I'm not excited by it. I thought that it was plastered with way too much unnecessary auto-tune. I know that they always have auto-tuned Liam's vocal, but it just seemed like, I don't know who was in charge of the mixing process, but it was, like, robotic. It was like there was none of Liam's like nuance in there, and I found that pretty hard to deal with. And I thought the songwriting was quite good. I think Mars to Liverpool was my favourite. But I wouldn't write home about it, no.
No.
And I'm glad they're working together. And that's a big sort of childhood dream of mine. If you told me that Liam Gallagher and John Squire would have been making a record together when I was a kid, I'd be like, what? Yeah. So, yeah, amazing. But, like, I don't know. We'll see. Like,
yeah, given the choice, it's like, you know, well, my problem with it, I thought, was that it wasn't, like, enough John Squire. Like, you know, it's sort of like you want him to be just over the top and like 7 minute solos and just going for it, like Second Coming John Squire. I mean, I know everyone always prefers the first Roses album. I love Second Coming. You know, all those riffs and everything, it's so bluesy and cool. And I was thinking, oh wow, if this is like a proper like psychedelic blues album, like with John just going for it and then Liam singing, it could have been amazing. But it was like there's a couple of tunes where he would start off on an awesome solo and then it would just like fade out at the end of the song. You're like, what are you doing? Like, you know, just give us a solo, you know.
Could have gone down the Seahorses route, you know, where like I think the Seahorses is a perfect example of the blend of those two worlds. Like, you've got the front man, the amazing voice and songwriting, and then John Squire fucking going for it.
Over the top of that, whereas John himself writing the songs, it's like, yeah, maybe bring in other people and then John to do the color, but
it could have been a production thing that whoever they got to produce it, which, you know, is probably the same person responsible for this horrendous amount of auto-tune and compression and what have you. But it's probably, it could be that that person is going, right, you know, this isn't the 90s anymore. Turn the fucking guitars down. We're going to make, do you know what I mean? Mm. Going to make a modern record. And then, of course, it suffers as a result of that because you've kind of castrated John Squire.
Yeah, yeah. You're taking away what he does the best. But
yeah, yeah. But I don't know, he might have produced it himself and now I'm just fucking chatting shit.
well, that's normal standard for the Oasis podcast anyways, that's all good. let's just dig into I Hope I Think I Know a bit more things. I know you've talked about like your history with it and stuff, but like as a tune, so let's just be clear, like, so it's on Be Here Now. It was, I always lump it together with Girl in the Dirty Shirt. Because yeah, you kind of got those, they're next to each other on the record. They weren't singles, but then you've got like Fading Out that's like quirky and weird, and you've got like there's other tunes like, you know, like It's Getting Better Man that they played live and that they did on the TV broadcast and stuff like that, whereas then you've got Girl in a Dirty Shirt and I Hope I Think I Know that are these two that, I mean, people might see as filler, but I love them both, right? And and I Hope I Think I Know is right up there for me. I absolutely love it. I will always, you know, it's one I'll always put on. It's like a solid 4 out of 5, just awesome, upbeat Oasis tune. And that's what, yeah, I want Oasis for. I want upbeat bangers. That's my favourite Oasis.
Yeah, me too.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CT&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And he wrote it, because you know when he goes on to Chris Evans in 96, I think, or it might have been even earlier. I think it's 96 because it looks really 96 when he's on there. And he's like, oh, what have you been up to? He's like, oh, I've written two new tunes, one called My Big Mouth and one called I Hope I Think I Know. And
great pull, mate. Great pull. You've just got your Oasis credentials, absolutely.
That title. But I've heard you write a song called My Big Mouth.
Yes. No, it's My Big Mouth.
Okay.
Not your
one. Right. My Big Mouth. You're into that one at the moment. What's the other one you're into at the moment?
It's called I Hope I Think I Know.
Now, you've been rehearsing these?
I have indeed. They're finished.
Are they completely orchestrated, arranged? Or is it just you and your guitar, the melody's there?
My Big Mouth is completely finished. One's called I Hope I Think I Know, just needs...
I Hope I Think I Know
needs a little bit of touching up here and there, and that's done. And then there's a few others milling about.
Guitar over there.
I know, Chris.
You.
Can I say there is not enough money in the street that would make me play it to you any of my new songs? It would cost you 50 grand. And unless you've got it, or else if you're teasing. That's not even 50 pence, mate. That's
no, 20p. Who was that for?
All right, I tell you what, right?
That's Gabby Rosling. Right.
Right. Heads we play them, tails we don't.
Okay.
Come on. As we play him, tells me that.
Is that what I said?
Edge.
It's Edge! It's Edge! A little bit. It wasn't. You know it wasn't.
You tell. Never. No, excuse me. It was Tails. Never trust a man. Never trust a man who's got a mirror in the shape of his own head. Tails.
A riff of My Big Mouth. The riff. A chord. Yes.
We got a plectrum.
Oh!
Ah! No.
And I Hope I Think I Know is really of that time. Like, it sounds, it's so bombastic and sure of itself. It's so, like, like the lyrics for a start, it's so perfect. I think that's why Noel's a bit embarrassed about it in hindsight. Maybe it was like, well, you can't, but maybe not. I wonder if someone close to him said something, or maybe Liam didn't like it, or I can't imagine Liam not liking it, because it's like Some Might Say, and it's very similar chordally and vocally to Some Might Say, just faster and like more full of itself, which is amazing. Like for that period of time when they were the biggest band in the world at that moment, and that's what it is for me. It sums up exactly where they were at in no other way, no better way.
Yeah.
Does a song on the album represent that than that song? Which is why I think it's bonkers they didn't give it the runaround on tour.
Yeah.
And it's always been my favourite off that record. Like, it comes on, I go, fuck me.
Mm.
Like Liam's vocal's great. It's on the... What I love about Liam's vocal on that whole record is that the wheels are coming off. It's not perfect anymore. Like, obviously, it wasn't perfect in 96. I think it was perfect in 95, really. That's when it's like, fucking hell, this young man is otherworldly. And then the partying and all the chaos of the next 2 years and the years preceding that is catching up with him in 97.
Yeah.
And in 98, in those performances in South America, when they're really at the end of the tour, you're like, fucking hell. Like, it's gone. He needs to go to bed for a fucking fortnight. Like this is ridiculous. But yeah, it was kind of, you know, when you're like at the absolute peak and it's all about to go wrong. Well, it's kind of going wrong, but it's still beautiful. It's still like what it is, still the essence of what Oasis truly was on that record. And Liam's voice is, you know, bang on for that in that moment. And I know. Yeah, it's my favorite tune on that record. I actually love it.
What I love, look at the chords, and obviously you play it live, and it's not only the famous busking clip, but I've seen you do it on like acoustic as well, and like, was that a radio session or something?
It was a podcast for RD1 Clothing down in Hastings. They're like a football casuals shop, great people, and they just went, yeah, come down. We'll have a chat and play some tunes. So they obviously brought up I Hope, I Think I Know, and then I played it. Tell me you're free, then you tie me down. From my chains, I think it's a pity. What did it cost you to wear my crown? You don't like me, why don't you admit? Feel a little down today. And I ain't got much to say. You're gonna miss me when I'm not there. It's usually where most people like yourself have discovered me through that. You know, anywhere in that world, if they have discovered me, it's usually via that.
Yeah. What I love about it. So it's like, you know, you could play it on acoustic. Yeah. You know, if anyone can play a few chords, you can play it, because it's what, like D, E minor, G5, B minor, A, G5. So it's doable, right? For even dickheads like me who can't really play. But what I really love is that there's the the verse and stuff is like pretty straightforward. Then you have that fun, like, you know, da 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 da, which is just a really nice little added bit, isn't it? You don't need to do that, but it's just, I suppose at that time in BNL, they're like, yeah, do this as well, and they're adding in little extra flourishes and stuff that wouldn't necessarily have been there, like if that was a Definitely Maybe tune.
Yeah, well, when Alan McGee, at the time in the interviews, he says, oh, they're working on some new material. You know, it's great. It sounds like The Who. It's moments like that, like, this is what they're going for. They've been listening to The Who a lot. You know, that bound, bound, bound. That could be Pete Townsend. It could also be AC/DC in the same respect. Not that I'm not sure where if AC/DC were a band that Oasis ever really loved, but you know what I mean. It could be.
Yeah, yeah. It's just little bits, isn't it? You know, you can sit and play. You know, I've heard in your stuff as well, like you can sit and play like your chord sequence, and it's like, well, no, just little bits in between, you know, little flourishes, little like transition chords and things like that, that just take that next level, which has never really got there. And I don't think people always say, oh, Oasis stuff is so basic, but it's like, no, there's not. Yeah, it's not like all these bizarre jazz chords and stuff, but there's enough that, especially like I'm, you know, I've got them hanging up, but I'm not a good guitar player at all. I can do open chords and that's about it. And often you're like, wait, where's he, why are you gone? Oh, okay. And then you get it. Like there's something else. And I think for me, it's like the two bits that really take it up a notch for me is If I Stumble, Catch Me When I Fall. And he goes to the F sharp minor seven. Catch me when I fall. And and then what I love, because baby, after all, and then you want to go, you're my Wonderwall. You know what I mean? You're after all. I can't help myself. I'm thinking, you're my Wonderwall, like my flowers. But that's next time you play it, mate. You'll have to pull that one out.
You're my Wonderwall.
But it's little things like that that definitely take it up a level. There's a reason George Martin called Noel Gallagher the greatest songwriter of his generation at that time, because it's those little extras that people aren't necessarily pulling. And they're not necessarily intentional either. Like, I mean, there might be. I mean, Noel is pretty calculated, but yeah, I mean, he claims not to be, but you know, he's very intelligent, really, as a songwriter, and just generally, he's a very intelligent bloke. But it comes across in the songwriting in a way that I think Damon Albarn would have loved. Like, I love Blur. I'm not against them, but like the difference between like Damon at that time would say things like, I remember seeing him in an interview say, they go, like, oh, why do you think everyone likes Blur? And he went, well, because it's intelligent. It's like, don't say that. Like, don't, you're not, it's like David Brent talking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yet Noel would just say, oh, you know, I just fucking chucked it down on a beer mat. Like, yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Just tongue-in-cheek, kind of not taking himself too seriously, which is kind of where they have the edge over Blur and the general public, is that they really didn't give a fuck.
But it's also like you said, it's like he you know, even like lyrics, like he's like, yeah, yeah, whatever, whatever. But I mean, you look at this one, it's like they're okay, it might not be like, you know, Bob Dylan or whatever, but it's just, they just work so well, you know, they scan so well. You know, feel a little down today and I ain't got much to say, you're gonna miss me. It's just fun to sing, isn't it? And that's why people love it so much, because you know it's, you can sing at the top of, you know, I don't care, you know, and it's just like, you want to sing it.
It's really cathartic singing it, like singing those words and it meaning so much via the music. It's so like, come on, we're fucking going, like, it's real, like, it's the thing about Oasis, they always had like forward motion. You always felt like you were on the journey with them doing it every time you sing a song. Even the mellow ones, it's got this purpose to it of, we are going to the fucking moon and we're going now, and are you coming with us?
Love it. What do you think? Do you think it should have been a single, or do you think it's okay where it was on the album?
Well, I hope. I think I know. Do I think it should have been a single? it's definitely a stronger song than Do You Know What I Mean. And also, I think that on the Oasis reunion, obviously they could have played so many songs, and Do You Know What I Mean was obviously going to be, well, maybe not obviously in the set list, but you know, it was the lead single of that time. So from Noel's perspective, it would have been madness not to put it in. But I don't think it was by any stretch. I love it. Obviously, it's a good song. It does recycle the Wonderwall chords, which is odd. but I don't know why it was chosen as the lead single when you had... But surely people at the record company would have been like, well, what about this? What about, you know, like they did with What's the Story, when they went, well, you know, what about Wonderwall and things like that?
Mm.
But maybe by that point, because they were the biggest band at that point, that they stopped taking advice, or people stopped giving them advice. They just went, you know what? Whatever you're shitting out is gold. So we're just going to fucking do whatever you want now.
Yeah.
Do you think Beer Here Now suffered as a result of that in terms of, well, A, the single choice being, Do You Know What I Mean? I don't think that's a strong single, especially with a strong enough single for what they had.
Right.
Phrase that. I think most other acts, that would be a very strong single. But and also the production, for instance, I think they were obviously taking loads of drugs. Like, there's no excuse for the length of the songs, especially when it's just going round in circles. Like, it's Getting Better, Man is just the longest thing I've ever heard. Anyway, I'm really going off topic here. Do I think it should have been a single? Yeah, I've never thought about that because it wasn't. So I haven't ever been asked that question, or I've never thought of it in that light. But come to think of it, yeah, it's like, it's the Some Might Say of that album.
Yeah,
it's even more sure of itself than Some Might Say. It's like it's up tempo, like more so than Some Might Say.
Mm.
Yeah, why not? Mm. Imagine a world where. I Hope, I Think, I Know was the lead single, and I don't think they would have been criticised for it.
No. Well, funnily enough, I mean, at the time, you know, when Do You Know What I Mean came out, and then Stay Young was the B-side, people were like, well, that should have been the single, you know what I mean? And it was funny, like you said at the start, I'd never thought of that before, really. But yeah, they are very similar, aren't they? They've got that upbeat bounciness and sort of similar structures and stuff.
Yeah. But, you
know, I think Stay Young's even a better option for single, just because it's... I Hope, I Think, I Know hasn't necessarily got the sort of typical build to a chorus. You know, it's like you get the as We Beg and Steal and Borrow element, and then the You Never Forget My Name. Whereas in Stay Young, it's got that huge build to the chorus, isn't it? So, which is what Oasis were famous for.
And Stay Young is a perfect sentiment for that time.
Mm.
You know, Stay Young, and also with Noel like turning 30. Around that time, or getting there, or maybe he was 30, I don't know, but it would have been in his mind of like, you know, fucking hell,
Stay Young.
Not getting any younger here, but like, yeah, Stay Young would have been a perfect single.
Hmm.
It was always treated as though it was, though, by the fans. I think, you know, it was played very early in the set, if not. Like second? Did they play second?
Yeah, 97 tour. It was very early. Yeah, like the G-Max gig and stuff.
Yeah, so they come out, play Be Here Now. I think it might be second or third. It's very early on that they play Stay Young. So they must have been very proud of it.
Yeah, second. Yeah. Be Here Now, Stay Young, Stand By Me.
Yeah, but maybe that is why we're talking about it to this day. And that's the beauty of Oasis, is that the B-sides were often stronger than the chosen fucking singles or album tracks, or as strong. I mean, there's one that I just can't believe, given that I know we're not talking about this, but fuck it, we're talking about it. Yeah, there's one that I just cannot believe wasn't on the record, and that has never really, obviously it gets spoken about in Oasis circles, but given the what I think was actually a reasonably weak record compared to what they'd put out before.
Can I guess what you're going to say?
Go on.
Let's All Make Believe.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's one of the greatest songs he ever wrote, still to this day. And I play it on my own, and I'm like, oh my God. And I've got a theory as to why it didn't land on the record. And I think I heard Noel talking about this actually in an interview in Japan around that time. But because the band is all sort of breaking up around this time when they're, and it was the first song they went into record, I believe, when they did Standing on the Shoulder of Giants in that chateau in the south of France where they all, where they tried to do it or whatever. And the obviously the tensions are pretty high. Which is where the sentiment of the song is clearly about the fractured relationship, I think, between Noel and Liam and the rest of the band, maybe, or it could. I think it is about that, but I think that as a result of that, Noel wouldn't have wanted to put it on the album because he didn't want to. Being quite emotionless, forward-facing towards the audience, and stoic, I don't think he wanted to let people in that much.
Got you.
Do you know what I mean? That's my little theory, because there's no excuse for that. So there's no way anyone would have listened to that song and gone, well, I can see Elias a better song than this. Like, it's not. There's no fucking way on planet. And that's not even one of the worst moments. Like,
yeah.
I think that record is laden with shit. Like, and what's the one that sounds like the Beatles' Psychedelia?
Well, there's Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is.
That's not good.
There's Little James.
That's awful.
There's Sunday Morning Call.
Bad song.
Where did it all go wrong?
Well, exactly.
There's Roll It Over, which is great.
Yeah, Roll It Over is an amazing song. Yeah.
Then you've got Go Let It Out.
Yeah, brilliant song.
Who Feels Love?
No.
No. I think that might be it. Yeah, Go Let It Out, Who Feels Love, Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is, I Can See a Liar, Where Did It All Go Wrong? Oh, Fucking in the Bushes, obviously.
Oh, great, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Amazing. Roll It Over.
And it starts so promisingly, you think, fucking hell, like, here we go.
Oh, Gas Panic's the only one we've missed.
Oh, Gas Panic, great. Yeah, one of the greatest songs, and one of my favourites to cover. Yeah.
So there's so many highs and lows on that album, isn't there? But yeah. And there's only 10 tracks, so it's like, they could have gone 11 and stuck Let's All Make Believe on it. So I think you're absolutely right. I think there must have been a reason for him to go, no, I just don't want it on there, you know, just for the emotional factor or whatever.
Yeah. Or maybe there'd been arguments about it with Liam. I know Noel said Liam never asked what the songs were about, but I don't know.
I mean, it's pretty obvious, you know what I mean?
Yeah, especially if like Noel's written it, he's like, right, sing this. And it's like... Yeah. Okay, well, I'm singing about my own fucking behaviour here. Like, what the fuck?
I know, it's bizarre, isn't it? So let's all make believe we're still friends and we like each other. Let's all make believe in the end we'll need each other. Let's all make believe that all Oh, God. But yeah, awesome. All right. Well, look, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure today. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, it's been amazing, mate. Thank you so much for having me on, James.
You just get the chance to talk shit about Oasis for an hour. It's good fun.
Yeah, I hope none of this ever gets fucking back to them. They're my favourite band on the planet.
Mate.
I've all got opinions, you know.
It's all good. It's all good. But yeah, I mean, well, so what's the future hold for yourself then? So you mentioned the Kentish Town Forum. Like, what else is going on?
So going in a couple of weeks to make the new record. Also, I haven't even mentioned this, but I'm playing. I got scouted last year to play Steve Marriott in the biopic about his life from the Small Faces, and we'd start filming that next week, Tuesday. So the script is fucking amazing. The script is fucking here. Best. Oh, mate, honestly.
What?
He's like my biggest hero, and I'm not an actor, but they'd said that they were sick of looking for actors, and they saw me, and the writer, Carol, and the producer, she said she, because she grew up with Steve, and she said she'd never seen someone as close to who he was already.
Yeah.
From like what I, you know, I'm small in stature. I've got the same color hair. Do you know what I mean? It's all there. And also I'm kind of doing a lot of the time kind of my best impression of him anyway. So it was like, to teach me how to act is easier than teaching what they said was it's easier than teaching a drama school kid.
Yeah.
In their words, it was easier than teaching a drama school kid cool.
Well, you know what? That sounds like Jamie Bell when he got Billy Elliot.
Oh, right.
Actually, because he wasn't an actor, but he was a dancer. And so they hired him. And I think there's another kid in it who was who ended up just doing like his mate or something. But he was going to get it, but they would have had to teach him how to dance. So they had to teach Jamie Bell to act. So there you go. You know what? Is this called All or Nothing?
All or Nothing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mate, I was reading about it. It's on Deadline. Like,
yeah, that's right.
That's you.
That's me, yeah.
Are we allowed to say that?
Yes. I'm trying to think about this. yeah, it's been announced. Like, I've put out a few things about it, and that each one has gone viral.
Okay, cool.
They've been talking about it. Yeah, it's okay. Like, I think if the things that I'd announced had got no attention, they might have been annoyed at me. But when they all went viral, they went, okay.
Oh, we don't mind then. Yeah, we get a bit of publicity. That's fine. Well, good luck with that, man. I love the Small Faces. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you'll be following in the footsteps of Martin Freeman, who played him in the short film.
Yeah, they're trying to get Martin. Martin, if you're listening, get involved.
Make it happen.
Because they obviously need an older Steve. They've got a younger... I'm doing Steve in his heyday, and which is a bit of a tall order. I'm on this mad, like, weight loss fucking journey to try and get, like, stick thin. Because his heyday, like, in the Small Faces, he's, like, 16 to, like, 21.
Yeah.
And I'm not that.
And they were all stick thin in the 60s, weren't they? Exactly. I suppose they just, like, they didn't have, like, decent food back then, so they were just, like, well, living off amphetamines, and that's about it.
That's it, yeah. Amphetamines, cigarettes.
Yeah.
I've quit smoking like 5-6 months ago. I had like hypnosis, but they just said like, oh, do you mind smoking during the filming for like, you know, and I was like, oh yeah, have you got these fake cigarettes? Can we have fake cigarettes? They were like, yeah, but it's not authentic, is it? You know, it. And I'm like, right. I'm trying to get my head around taking up smoking again because I love smoking. It's gonna be fucking ages to quit.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm going
to
try.
And they're like, we really need you to get on heroin to do a, you know, marry at 68. Do you mind? He'd be like, oh, okay, you're fine.
Yeah. I'll relapse for research purposes. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I promise. That was the only reason.
Oh,
God. Well, but, awesome, man. Well, that sounds really exciting. Do you know when it's coming out?
Next year. So we're filming. We're doing the trailer sizzler thing next week. And then... yeah, the film is to start in the autumn, by which point I'll hopefully be a stone lighter. And it's going to be fucking great. Like, and then out next year, sorry. Love is all around me, everywhere. It's all happening quite quick. I think it's it's either 2.5 weeks or 6.5 weeks intensive filming, all in fucking one go. I can't remember now off the top of my head, but yeah, and the script is unbelievable. I can't wait.
Oh, well, awesome, man. Well, look, brilliant. Well, look, we were excited about that. So obviously, where can the kids find you online? What's the best place to get hold of you?
Instagram at Laurie Wright Music, LaurieWright Music. Same with TikTok. And I think that's the handle on Facebook as well and YouTube. But yeah, if you just search Laurie Wright, you'll find it. Kentish Town Forum tickets, get them at LaurieWright.co.uk or just the link is in bio. New record, new music coming out really soon. A song called Fast Lane is going to be the next single, which is quite a little bit like I Hope I Think I Know, actually. It's definitely got the I Hope I Think I Knows about it. And it was obviously heavily inspired by that track in particular when I wrote it. And then the new album is called Cheers Drive. That's coming out in on Friday, October the 2nd, the day of the gig. And yeah, we're just recording that, and God knows, playing at Britfest in Cheshire. If that's any good to anyone. In between Wet and Holly Johnson.
Oh really?
Yeah, God knows, but yeah, that'd be
amazing.
Fun. Yeah.
Cheers Drive, is it like Cheers Drive? Because then once you get off a bus, you say Cheers Drive to the driver.
Yeah.
My kids take the piss out of me so much for saying Cheers Drive. They're like, don't say Cheers Drive. I'm like, that's the cool thing to say when you get off a bus. You say Cheers Drive.
No way. Do you know what? I was actually thinking about when I have kids, them taking the piss out of me for saying that. And then, so that's bizarre. Do you know what I mean? You have little daydreams. I think like one day I'm going to have kids and they're going to rip the piss out of me for that. Like the things that I rip the piss out of my dad for.
Yeah.
That's so funny that you just said that. I was thinking about that yesterday.
You got to do it. And that's the thing when you, and so as we're getting off the bus, they're almost waiting for it. They're like, here we go. Cheers, drive, like that. You got to do it.
But I love it, mate. Like, I think it's such a great phrase. And it's so specific to Bristol and the Southwest in general, but I'm from Cheltenham in between Birmingham and Bristol, so we, like, you know, that was always a thing growing up. And then I just say it all the time in London and people find it funny, like my mates find it funny because it's not what you say in London, but that makes me say it even more
loud. Okay. I'm from near Oxford, you see, so maybe it's like I'm the other side of the Cotswolds basically, so.
Oh right, so it's just generally a Southwest
maybe thing. I don't know,
whatever,
bizarre. But
But so I want the front cover to be like,
you're getting off a bus like that?
Yeah, but I'm going to change it to a plane. I have like a really psychedelic album cover. I'm getting off a plane and going, cheers, drive.
Fucking hell, awesome. Nice.
Good record, though. It's a good album. The songs are, they're good and they're coming together.
Awesome.
So I hope you enjoy it. I'll send you it in advance, man.
Nice. Well, thank you very much. I look forward to it. Laurie, thank you so much for your time, mate. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, mate. It's been a pleasure. I could stay here all fucking evening talking about Oasis.
Love it. All the best, man.
Cheers, mate. Take care.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
All right, there we go. Great to talk to Laurie. What a top man. Hope you guys enjoyed that. And yeah, make sure you're checking out his music and and get to see him live. Hopefully, I think it'd be good to do something as well. He's such a great performer and, you know, up for doing a few covers and things like that. Yeah, we'll definitely have to get him to a live event. That'd be awesome. Just following up, we've had a breakdown come in from our good friend Paul Costello for the last one that we covered in Oasis A to Z, which is I Can See a Liar. So let's have a bit of this.
Hello, James. It's been a while since I sent you a message, so hopefully everyone's well. Thought I would do a message on I Can See a Liar on the guitar chords first, seeing as you've done a good review of it, but I noticed you didn't go through the chords, so I thought, why not throw in a message? It's actually a song I've always really liked. I know the only thing holding it back is those lyrics on the chorus, which you mentioned. If I Can See a Liar Sitting by the Fire had been changed to anything else, that would have just elevated that song so much. But it is a really good tune. Like, the production on it is really good. Drums are really good. Guitars sound great. Vocals sound great. I love the delays on Liam's vocal going into the second verse. So there's lots to like about it, but unfortunately it's the lyrics that do let it down. But chord-wise, it's interesting enough as well. Nothing too crazy in it, but some nice ideas. So this is what I have come up with from listening to it. So to go through the chords of it, it's in D. The intro is D and C, but it's the way I hear it when I listen to it anyway, it's not like a full C chord. It's basically you're holding your D chord, but you're adding the C note in the bass, so you're getting this. So that's D, holding the D all the time, adding the C in the bass, and then going to a G for that chord. Then the drums kick in and the bass comes in with the little hammer-ons on from the C to the D like that. So that's basically still holding the kind of D again, but in the bass it's G, F, E, F, G. Now they could also play that as actual chords, so. And then you're into your verse section. It's a chromatically descending part, so it's going D, C sharp, C, B. But all the time it's holding the A note, except for the last, when it goes to the B, so it's like. So those last two notes there are B and a G. Then it goes to B flat for the pre-chorus. Up to C. Then up to D. Back to B flat. And then it does like an A, the A sus. And then to C. And then back to the chorus, which is. So that's kind of it. Then you have the solo, which is different chords again. It goes into B flat with an F in the bass, I think, so it's this kind of sound. Then to F, up to G, then back to B flat, back to F, and then back to your A sus, then back to C, and then back to your. It's a nice little riff to play that, I have to say. Some nice chords. The solo's pretty cool. You've got a wah solo going on and some other stuff. So there's like a couple of guitars playing there in the solo section. Great tune all around. Like, you covered off pretty well, bar the lyrics. As you kind of alluded to at some point in your episode, I think the reason it was included on the album, along with Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is, was because they're the two tunes that Liam really liked for their full-on balls-to-the-wall rock. Noel done a really good interview around the time of the release of the album with Dave Fanning, and it was kind of a longer interview. It might have been like a 40-minute interview where they were playing clips of the songs. He talked about that in that interview. He said, yeah, these two songs aren't great, but they're on because Liam loves them, basically. I taped that interview off the radio years ago when it was on, so I've long since lost it, but I'm sure maybe it's out there online somewhere. That's the chords of I Can See a Liar. As I can hear them anyway, they might not be 100% accurate, but like I said, great tune all in all, and it was actually nice to hear it being discussed in detail. I was like, yeah, that's actually a better tune than I remember. But again, the only downfall is those couple of lyrics. If Noel had took 5 minutes more to come up with something better for the chorus and maybe pushed himself to write a second verse, that would be an absolute belter of a tune. So, yep, that's it from me. Talk again soon. Take it easy.
Cheers, Paul. Awesome stuff. And yeah, completely agree. Actually, when you break it down and listen to the chords and what it's doing, like that descending line throughout the verse and all those sort of things, that's awesome. That's like a really well-written set of chords to create a tune out of. And like we're saying in the interview with Laurie, it's like Noel would just come up with these little bits, like having that descending through the verse. That's just really cool. It's just like this excellent little addition. So yeah, really great stuff. But yeah, then he puts in, I Can See a Liar Sitting by the Fire. And that's all people think about, because, you know, that's it. That's what your ear is drawn to, is a clunking lyric like that. But anyway, but yeah, Paul, thank you so much, mate. Thanks for sending that over. If you want to get in touch about I Can See a Liar, or about I Hope I Think I Know, or about I Believe in All, which I've forgotten about, so that's going to come next, then do feel free to get in touch, oasispod@gmail.com. All right, that'll do it for today then. Many thanks for listening. Thanks most of all go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is. It's greatly appreciated. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where I'll occasionally post bonus episodes. The episodes always go up early, and you can get access to the Discord, which is a great community of like-minded Oasis podcast people. But yeah, thank you very much. As ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.
It's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.